WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donateyourcar.
Let's try that again. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. It's 11 o'clock. Coming up next, The Positive Mind.
Hi, everybody. This is Kev O'Donohue, New York State licensed mental health counselor.
And this is Nassima Diane Beamer, somatic experiencing practitioner and body-centered trauma therapist. And this is The Positive Mind.
Bringing you some ideas, concepts, guests, try and help you lead a more positively minded life. Have you ever been lost? And I don't mean in the car. Have you ever been lost in life? Trying to find your footing again, you know, out there and wondering, where do I go? What do I do next? Is anybody going to help me? Lost. Have you ever felt lost? I don't know an adult that has not felt lost at one time or another in their life. And so we're going to talk today, two guests in the studio today who help people who made a mistake in life and might feel lost. Can you imagine being 22, 23, and having spent 5 years in jail? So you transitioned in jail from 17 to 22. What must you feel like when you walk out the prison door? Or you've been in jail for 30 years, you're 50 years old, and you went in jail when you're 20, and you come out when you're 50. What must it feel like? I imagine it must feel like being lost in some way. And how do we help these people? What do we do? Well, today I have the Chief External Affairs Officer for CEO Works, a nonprofit here in New York City that has spread out across the country that helps, let me get this right, formerly incarcerated.
That's correct.
Formerly incarcerated individuals transition from, I would say, a condition of lostness to foundness. Mr. Christopher Wattler is here. Welcome, Christopher, to WBAI, The Positive Mind.
Thank you, Kevin. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your audience.
Yes. I really want to talk about how it is you came upon this mission and how you help people. We also have in the studio Alexandra Pulit, who is the social worker, the mental health component, the leader of the mental health component for CEO Works. And if you want to look this up, it's CEOworks.org. And they've added this mental health component to this mission. And we want to explore that with Alexandra. But first, I want to talk to Christopher. Christopher, tell us about the process from being incarcerated to finding work and getting readjusted into society via this program.
Yeah, I really appreciate your opening this idea of being lost, because when you are getting ready to come home from prison or jail, you can feel a little lost, and particularly for individuals who may suffer from mental illness. You know, there are over 2 million jail admissions a year. Individuals who are mentally ill, and 83% of them receive no services while they're in jail. So you can be lost just as a regular person, maybe experiencing incarceration, but also as, you know, as someone with a mental illness who may need treatment and are not able to get it. So if I'm getting ready to leave, and I want to draw a distinction, prison is where people who are sentenced for more serious crimes, felony crimes, are sent after they're sentenced. Jail and is
a great distinction.
It's important to make, because folks tend to conflate the two. Jail are where people, the majority of people, are detained pending a judge finding whether or not they're guilty. So most people who are in local jails are actually not serving time because they've been found guilty. They are in jail because they are awaiting a determination on their case.
But that jail time will count if they do get sentenced. Is that right?
Yes. For the most part.
Right.
And in both cases, you know, it's very difficult when you're preparing to come out. So prison, you have more time, right? You've been in for a while.
Oh yeah.
If you're fortunate, your prison system will have reentry services and begin to prepare you for release back into the community. If you're coming out on what's called parole or community supervision, you are going to be told, you know, where you need to report, and mm-hmm. there are going to be other conditions mm-hmm. As part of that release. And of course, some people just finish their sentence if you're in prison, and then you're released and you don't have any parole officer mm-hmm. Or anyone kind of watching out for you. So you go back into the community on your own.
Right.
Jail, the majority of jail stays are relatively short. You know, New York, for example, the most that you're supposed to stay in jail on a charge is up to a year for a misdemeanor. But as we know in the city, right. all too often people will, you know, stay in jail for short stays, mm-hmm. 7 days, 2 weeks, and you're coming right out. And so sometimes you have people who are mentally ill, for example, and they may be doing a life sentence, you know, 10 days at a time because mm-hmm. they're cycling in and out of the jail system and not getting help. So when you come out into the community, there are a couple things you need. You need to reconnect with your family.
If you have one.
If you have family, you need to also get a job. Some folks may need to attend to health issues, whether it's mental health or other mm-hmm. health needs. And that period right after release is the time where we can either win the game or lose the game
right.
with people who are coming out. And so if you get immediate services, you know, immediate support, you're more likely to do better. Mm-hmm. Most people who recidivate within the first 12 months, 12 to 15 months of release. So that much of that happens right in the first 6 months.
Do you work closely with prisons or jails? There must be. I would think you would need some kind of communication with the prison system in order to get these people and educate them about what services you're providing in the first place.
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. Yes, we do. Our mission, CO's mission, is to help people who are leaving incarceration to connect to employment. And our theory of change is that when you give people kind of comprehensive supportive employment services immediately after release, they're more likely to get a job, more likely not to return to incarceration. So that work is both in the interest of the community, it's the interest of law enforcement, it's in the interest of our participants and local businesses who often mm-hmm. are looking for people to hire, but also it's in the interest of correction systems, you know, that you don't, when someone leaves, you don't want them coming back. And so a job is one of the ways that you achieve that.
And so a success is somebody who's not coming back, more people not coming back than that do come back.
Exactly.
And what I like about it is that you pay people immediately. A worker doesn't have to wait 2 weeks, a month to get a check or something. They'll come out. So tell us about this idea. Where did this idea come from, first of all?
Yeah, it is. I have to say it's a feature that's pretty distinctive among organizations that are doing reentry workforce, providing reentry workforce services. So CEO began, we became an independent organization in 1996, but since the late 70s, we're a demonstration project through the Vera Institute of Justice. And so spent a lot of time kind of building this model. And what we learned is that when people leave incarceration, most job training programs will say to them, you come to us, you'll enroll, you'll take a training, a course. You could be there 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months, you know, working
right,
for us.
Right.
But you're not making any money during that time. And so that can be really challenging for people who have just left prison. Maybe you are returning home to your parents' house or your a significant other, and mm-hmm. you want to be able to contribute in that situation. 55% of our enrollees are parents. So you also want folks to start to earn money because
yes.
they can contribute to their kids' lives. So when you come to us, we have a four-phase model. You do our orientation. We call it Pathways to Employment. You are then placed on a transitional work crew the very next week, and you begin to work with CEO. We pay you
Fastest
every day.
Fastest job you ever got.
Fastest job you'll ever get. You work in one of our transitional work crews. Every day across the country, 450 people are working on our transitional work crews, and they're getting immediate pay that day. We use a pay card product.
Okay.
That we load the money on their card, so no need to go to check cashing places and mm-hmm. pay high fees. We tell them where they can, fee free, withdraw their money, or they can use their money the way all of us do, in the cashless economy to purchase things.
Sure.
And while they're working transitional employment, we are also assigning them a job coach, and that coach works with them to address any barriers that they might have. So if I don't have a resume, if I've never been on an interview, my job coach is going to work with me on that. But also, if I need access to some services, if I have a health condition or a housing problem, my job coach is going to help me to address those. The whole idea is to get them what we call job start ready. And that's where we have assessed that they have a resume, they know how to interview.
Wonderful.
We've seen them work, so the work they're doing for us goes on their resume. So even if you've never worked before,
it's a great way to build a resume,
build
a work history.
Build your resume.
Wonderful. Yeah. Alex, can you talk a little bit about this coaching and therapy, but also about, have you gotten feedback about this empowering tool of getting paid immediately after a week out of prison? That you're not waiting for a 6-week training program. You're able to participate, contribute back into your family. So you must be mm-hmm. someone who gets a lot of this feedback.
Yeah, we do actually. I'll meet with a participant. We call our program participants. And they'll let me know, I'm so grateful for the fact that I'm able to get this immediate work and immediate pay because I don't have to go down that other path of how I was making money previously.
Right.
And it really has a huge impact on someone's self-esteem as well, because they're bringing home money. They're able to pay for like a birthday party for their children, and they're contributing immediately. So participants are very, very much thankful and on board with the model that we have.
What are your issues? What are the issues that come up in the coaching aspect to the program?
Sure. So some of the issues that may come up for the coaching, we call them external barriers. So it could be somebody that's, having a housing crisis. They may be homeless or even mandated to a particular shelter where they're being checked in on by their PO. That could be pretty stressful for an individual that's never been in that sort of living condition previously and now is, in a way forced to. So that's one big barrier that individuals face. They also are facing, how do I cope now with the stress of being back in community and becoming who I want to be, right? So now there's more options, there's more decisions to be made. And the coping skills. So maybe somebody had dealt in the past with, stress using substances or, kind of like acting out. So that's not an option anymore. So in these coaching sessions on the one-on-one coaches that they trust very much so, and they build a relationship with them, almost counseling-like, I would say, they go ahead and they disclose this information. They'll say, I'm under this stress because...
Gosh, it must tear your heart out. I mean, how do you not burn out? Because you're hearing dramatic stories that you want to just reach out for and solve or help fix. And there are so many things you can do.
So one part of what we do is actually train our staff with several mental health, modalities are what they're called. One is called Mental Health First Aid. It's a national movement. It's actually an international movement. It started in Australia.
And you can get certified here in New York, by the way, with this new – which I am certified, by the way. I did one of the many that here in New York. I think I got it for free.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And we actually – I'm glad you mentioned that because We actually provide it to the community as well. We use our Bronx site as a host. We host cases. They do the mental health first aid training, and we opened it up to community. So we were able, in the last quarter, able to provide 41 certificates to people in community, including our own participants that want to receive mental health first aid training, because we do have participants that do want to go into a social service field for their careers.
Yeah, of course.
So I would say since we started mental health first aid from 2016, we have about 124 staff that are trained in the modality. And we also, one other modality we use, which is prevalent amongst our entire our national organization, is motivational interviewing. So it's a different way of working with someone where you don't necessarily have to come up with the answers. The person you're working with defines their values, lets you know what their goals are, and it's a partnership. So that actually reduces the likelihood of burnout, because no longer you as the provider are responsible for this person's life.
Right. It's a really great tool with substance abuse, motivational interviewing. But you have to come up with the questions. I remember it in my training with motivational interviewing. You're trying to ask an open-ended question so you'll elicit what is valuable in your world, in your life. What is it you see for yourself? Don't let's give it to them. You need to do this. You should do that. You have to stop, you know, taking drugs. You have to go make a living. You know, that's just going to contribute to being lost.
It reduces the judgment, and it gives a level of mutuality and partnership that people are really wanting. They're really wanting to be able to connect with others, and this allows for that to occur.
These are really empowering tools, money and motivational interviewing. I want to go to prison. Not jail.
Yeah,
I want to go to prison so I can come out and get all these services.
Well, we definitely, you know, we believe that these services should be in communities. And if you think about mental illness in particular, I mean, we're talking about people coming home from prison. But if you think about young people, you know, folks even before prison in the community, you know, we are just missing lots of people who could be helped early on and prevented from even becoming incarcerated in the first place.
Right. And aren't a lot of your staff folks that have been through your program?
Yes, we actually do have a high level of staff that have lived experience and actually inform the policy and the programming and the work that we do.
Yeah, we recently started a pilot program where we hired a team of staff. We call them credible messengers. And these are individuals with lived experience that we hire intentionally because they have lived experience to use that experience in the work. And we were noticing that our young adult participants, 18 to 24, would often struggle at CEO. And it's maybe not unusual for someone in that age not to know what they want to do, not to be particularly committed. You know, in MI, we call it ambivalent.
You know, what it is. I have years to waste. I mean, when you're 18 to 24, you'd think in your mind, oh, I have many years to get it together.
Exactly. Right. So, we started a program, a kind of peer group program led by these mentors. And what we are seeing is that the young people are sticking with CEO, more likely to stay engaged with us, more likely to get employed. And that, for us, is very encouraging. But it shows the power of people who have lived experience. And if you support them and train them and help them, you know, to use that experience constructively, they can really do a lot of good in the community.
We want to put it out to the audience to feel free to call us here in the studio, 212-757-5555. If you've been incarcerated here in New York State, you're in 10 other states, 9 other states?
We are in 26 cities. We just opened in New Orleans.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you've been incarcerated and are familiar with CEO Works or not, or you experienced that sense of being lost coming out of prison and found your footing somehow, some way, we want to hear about it. You also can ask questions to Christopher Wattler and Alexandra Pullett. With this unique program, it seems very empowering to me. We talk about in mental health not just fixing the symptoms, not just taking away the depression, taking away the anxiety, but getting the power, getting the initiative, getting a sense of initiative that's going to help you reconnect to your community. It's not enough to just treat the symptoms. And I want to get back to you with that about Alex. So give us a call, 212-757-5555.
You know, something that I recall speaking with Alex about is that you put a lot of focus on helping people find their new path. Like, it's not like, you know, you're here and we're going to move you into construction, or you're here and we're going to move you into this. The participants really get an opportunity to sort of explore for themselves, like what are some of their options? What excites them? What gets them motivated?
Money. I'm kidding.
It's I mean, money is definitely a need. Like to think about Maslow's hierarchy.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
So I know our participants come to us because they have these basic needs. Mm-hmm. But when you look behind the surface a little bit and you talk to them, what you find is that they, like any of us, like they have these aspirations for their lives. You know, they have things that they want to do, mm-hmm. whether it's for their children. Even for their community. I was talking with someone the other day who was saying, look, I really want to give back. I want to do this work that, like, the work you guys are doing here mm-hmm. at CEO. And I was able to talk to him about what it took to do, kind of demystify for him that, look, yeah, you can work for CEO. We have staff who are former participants. Here's mm-hmm. how you do it. So, you know, it's that motivation for them right. to be kind of full participants in the community. Mm-hmm. And for them, a job is that. So it's money, yes,
yeah,
but
sure.
more than money.
No, the structure of a job and the self-esteem that is gained by having a job and being functional out in the you know, the observable workplace rather than a subterranean underground workplace. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of these things are much more important than money. A feeling of belonging, another Maslow idea. So I'm sure it's more than beyond money. Who's your most motivated? One question that came up to me, like when somebody comes out of prison, they're not addicted anymore, or are they? You know, I mean, substance abuse is a huge issue with recidivism. And how do you prevent substance abuse? I mean, I would think that people that are released from prison have gone through withdrawals, have, you know, not had a substance in years. Okay. The last thing they would do would take a drug, but that's not the case. Mm-hmm. So educate us a little bit about this substance abuse component.
Sure, Kevin. Of course, you know, one condition of parole probation is that individuals that have a history of substance use or even had a conviction having to do with substances are often tested on a regular...
Mandatory?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So that could be a, you know, something that they know is going to potentially be happening for them. So that's an additional pressure. You know, it's an external pressure that is a given, is a known. And also there's mandated substance abuse treatment programs, or substance use treatment programs, as we're calling them now. Someone could be mandated to go inpatient in a residential facility mm-hmm. and then come, you know, do the work sites with us during the day and have
right.
to go back at night.
Mm-hmm.
Some people may just be doing outpatient, you know, 3 days a week. So there's usually, you know, people that have that history have a discharge plan in place to where those issues would potentially be addressed. Now, whether that's effective or not, you know, is another, you know.
Well, I can't hurt. I mean, mm-hmm. having to be tested periodically is a good thing. And if they fail, then they're going to lose the services, lose access to making money through CEO Works, et cetera.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And getting connected to the community like we talk about. We do have somebody on the line, but Nasima, go ahead with your question.
Well, I was just going to say, it seems like there's also all this support for building a new community for them to be in, one that isn't like the old community and would, you know, sort of establish or make it harder to, you know, go back to their old ways. And that's a big change for a lot of people to, like, leave their friends from before and make new friends in the after and keep supporting that sort of new group and that new community that
Absolutely.
They're participating in. So I do appreciate so much about how much community building you do.
Our participant in particular let me know, he said, my net worth is my net work, and that's changing now. So he was actively deciding, are these the individuals that I can spend time with? I'm not sure. Maybe I should go this route and find other supports.
Great.
Yeah, I wanted just to highlight, it's important to know, sometimes when we talk about substance use or mental health needs, and particularly around correctional populations that tend to be, people of color, people who are poor,
yeah,
we think that you can't really do anything about these problems, and that is not the case. And so we know, for example, that techniques like motivational interviewing, we also use cognitive behavioral interventions.
Sure.
Are really great to combine with supportive employment programming or treatment modalities to help people be more successful. So the new community, in order to be in a new community, you need to be a new man or woman too, right? You need to change your thinking about how you are dealing with life situations. And that's tough work. But it's the developmental work that all of our participants are committed to.
You have such a manner, Christopher. I have to say, are you a trained counselor?
No, I'm this. I grew up in Central Brooklyn, so you learn how to use words so very carefully.
Good to have you. We have E on the line. Hi, E.
Hello. How's it going?
Very well. How are you today?
All right. Listen, I have you on speaker in a vehicle. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, we can. Do you have a question for Christopher or Alexandra?
I do. So I just wanted to just mention that I'm mentally ill. I'm diagnosed. I'll say that outright. I'm also in recovery. I had a previous drug problem that got really out of control to where I'm surprised I made it. I'll just say that. And I've done multiple years in state prison in New York State. Okay. I've been home now 17 years. Since 2003, I came home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my point is this. I've never called a radio station before, but I've been listening to you guys for the past little while, and there's two things that I wanted to say from much experience that I know. Number one, the worst problem that I had in the past 17 years of coming home was the fact that I was institutionalized when I came out, and I still am.
How are you still institutionalized? Okay. What do you mean?
Because, institutionalized means I got used to a certain format every day, a certain routine every day. I've been in 19 or 20 different places upstate New York now.
Oh, okay.
In maxes, mediums, minimums. I've been all over the system. The point, I acted out years ago. My parents passed away. I was an unhappy camper. It sucked to be me. I acted out, and eventually, they put me in a cage until I learned how to act right, and eventually I did. And I found out, I just want to be good. I don't want any problems. Since then, things have been going better. However, I've still had to deal with my issues. The hardest thing that I've had to deal with is the fact that in there, the only thing that happened was that I did a lot of time in isolation because I was mentally ill and I didn't want to take meds, okay? I got reactions from meds that people didn't know for sure because of the quality of the mental health department,
right.
Okay? I didn't get the right meds, so I had reactions and overreactions at times, and it caused me to freak out and get locked in a lot of times, all right? And so as a result, I live in a place now that has four rooms. I'm most comfortable in my bedroom with my door locked. I go around the house and check the door. I've been doing this for years.
Mm-hmm.
I have a flashlight. I go around and check to make sure because you know why? There's so many areas that I have to manage in my house. It's so frustrating because I'm used to being in a small space. Mm. That's my safe zone. Okay? That's something that came out of being incarcerated. I never had that before I went to prison. But, of course, I acted out. I was young.
Did you get any services for your mental illness? Did you get any counseling?
You mean in there or out?
Out.
Oh, of course, yeah. Like I said, I'm diagnosed now. I went through mental health treatment. I went through a bunch of different things. I went through some meds. I live in the state of Connecticut, and I even got my medical marijuana license. I've been trying to do it that way as opposed to any meds because I was.
Did you hear of CEO Works when you were in prison or when you came out?
I did.
What do you think of this idea of paying an inmate within the first week of working to get paid for a full day's work immediately? What do you think of that idea?
Here's the thing. I find it most importantly because I remember being in the yard. I remember being on my gate talking all day to guys. I remember working various jobs in the school and as a teacher's aide. And I know the mentality. The mentality is unfortunately a lot of good people, and some of them are just going the wrong way. Some of them chose the wrong path because it does suck to be them. The reality is that in there you do have CEO Works, you do have ASAC, KSAC, UVB, AVB, Understanding Violent Behavior, Alternative to Violent Regression, all these different programs, and they're all cognitive. Only problem with cognitive processes, in my opinion, is that a person has to choose to want to do right first in order for that to work.
And how did that change for you?
that changed for me because I just got tired. I was like, you know what? I'm going to die. I can't keep going this. I have to stop. The things that are hurting me, I have to stop.
Got it.
And I have to. And when people are not looking, I have to be good because I'm going to pay the price. And it's not about the incarceration. I did it. I was able to make it through it. I know I wouldn't die if I had, you know, I just didn't want to go through that anymore. And I realized that, hey, in order for me to have a better quality of life, I had to choose the right path. And for me, that meant either yes or no. I can do good or bad. That's my only choices that I have. And I chose to do good. And so, therefore, I was able to receive the benefit of that help. Other than that, everybody in there, when you say hire a person for the first week, the reality is most people come out and they can't wait to get back to the spot because when they got arrested, they were on their way to get high and get straight, and they never got there. When they got back, yes. When they got out, the people, they're like, dude, I wasn't finished. And so they go right back. The first check they get, not everyone, but a lot of people run back because they have an issue that they don't understand. They don't understand that they're truly powerless over their addiction. They don't understand that at that point.
Before we go to the break, I want Christopher and Alexandra to make a comment, unless you had a question for them. Did you have a question?
No. Well, I did. I did kind of have a question. I did want to have a question. I have a statement and a question that's, I guess, all in one.
Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Definitely tell me about this because this is something that I'm really concerned about. I rarely watch the news because I'm so traumatized about all the stuff. I just like to just be alone and quiet,
sure.
Mostly. You know. But here's the thing I've noticed. I thought to myself, I said, if we could change one thing with this politics and everything else, what would it be? Me, as a person who knows the system well. I went to group homes, foster homes, boys' homes, Sparkford, the whole bit, right, all my life, up until about almost 20 years ago. And I recognized one thing. The problem we're having in our society, especially in New York, is that the people that are managing us, our lives, when we can't manage it ourselves, are not properly trained. Meaning,
okay.
For instance, perfect example, what you're seeing on TV with the police department does a wonderful job. They're doing a hard job. However, they're not trained mental health specialists, and they're being asked to be. And they're working more than 10 years doing the same job, and it's burning them out. As a result, we can see the consequences.
I'm going to give you 10 more seconds, because then we're going to have to go to a break.
So my question is, do you guys feel that maybe the police department and correction officials maybe need to work less than 20 years in that same field? Maybe they need to move around and not get burned out. Do you think maybe that's burning them out, working 20 years in that field?
Great question. Great. Thanks for the call, E. Do you want to tackle that? I mean,
I think, you know, a couple things. First of all, I want to really congratulate the caller,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Like his journey.
Yes.
So, you know, really appreciate. It's not easy to share that story and wish him well. You know, what we know about, even in corrections, right? For example, in New York State, there are behavioral health units, right? And those units tend to have less violence. folks are really getting treatment. And that's safer for officers also. So we should, you know, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, they have trainings that they give officers and corrections people, workers, to help them to better engage with a client who may be decompensating or having difficulty.
Right.
And, you know, I have all sorts of stories I could tell you that I think make those kinds of responses better. And when you help police officers, I had a sheriff tell me once, I have my officers do this because I want them to get home at night. So even if a person is not concerned about the people, if you're concerned about safety for your officers or your corrections officers, you want them trained in these types of practices.
I find that most of them are, or they're getting that way. I'm wondering if mental health first aid here in New York City is being offered and becoming mandatory because there's always this question of why did they shoot the guy? When, you know, why didn't they shoot him in the leg or something? Or, you know, why don't they stun him instead? You know, and I think there's less of that shooting, thankfully, because officers are better trained to diagnose or to recognize threatening situations, mental health, people suffering from mental health issues, and knowing how to back off and how to approach them. So I think that is a change that's happening. But I do think a formal training for all officers at this stage would make sense.
Yeah, they are. The city's actually instituting CIT training for the new officers that are coming out into the field. And I can actually speak a little bit like anecdotally. We have, and for E, actually, you know, when we have some of our program participants that are dealing with, you know, severe mental health issues and maybe they're, you know, struggling with, having the right medications being prescribed to them or just struggling with everyday stressors. We have had had to call, you know, 911, because sometimes they'll come to our offices very, very distraught, and we'll have that conversation with them. We'll say, you know, due to what you said and what's mm-hmm. going on with you, whether mm-hmm. it's a threat to harm yourself or other, you know, we're kind of mandated to make sure you're safe and make sure the community is safe. So, you know, these are the options that we can do for you. And what we do in particular on our unit is we'll ask and call for a wellness check. We'll say, you know, we need police, you know, that are trained in mental health. And
you can say that when you call 911?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And we actually have officers that come. Some are, you know, have the regular, you know,
video camera
outfit on, you
oh,
know, the
okay.
regular, like,
oh, yeah.
you know, blues.
The uniform.
And then you'll see the ones that have the mental health training. They'll have a special badge.
Is that right?
Or an insignia. That's yeah. So we've been able to kind of see that firsthand, the usefulness mm-hmm. of the intervention when it comes from a mental health lens, as opposed to something punitive, like, they're, you know, what's going on with this person, and we
right.
need to take care of this person and take them in.
Right.
So, you know, we've seen it at our site. That it's been helpful, as long as our staff know how to, you know, properly utilize 911 and for what reason. And yeah,
who knew that you could call 911 and ask for a specific kind of treat, you know, yes. assistant
or a wellness check?
Yeah, a mm-hmm. wellness check,
etc. It's framed in the concept in the context of, you know, wellness and mental health wellness, as opposed to punitive.
Much more to discuss. We will take a musical break, and we will be back. This is The Positive Mind on WBAI in New York City. I'm Kev O'Donoghue. We'll be back after this musical break.
This morning for a reason. Thinking, talking, we've worked out our problems. Look like we should have better days in front. Just because we took our time to think and talk for a much better understanding.
Hey, E, that's for you. Thanks for calling us a four-corner room. We hope you get out of that room, E. There are services available to you. I know you're taking a lot of care, which is great, and we congratulate you. But the bottom line is connection. However you get it, connection. And we are happy to, again, have Alexandra Poulet and Christopher Wattler here from CEOWorks.org, a nonprofit organization here in New York that has expanded to 27 cities, 10 states, to help those who are lost, you know? I mean, we're all lost, but a specific cohort of people who are lost coming out of prison, who have nowhere to go. They're doing really great work. So we thank you for that. But hey, listen, we're asking you to become a WBAI buddy. We need you to participate in this station. These are community service members right here in our studio, really doing great work for our communities. And we are a community-sponsored radio show. So we need your support. And we're not asking it for nothing. We're asking it to support some of the programs here on the show. But also we're giving you here at The Positive Mind a lot of connection, you know, a chance of connection. We've already done one workshop in January. We're doing another one next Thursday on intuitive eating. The vagus nerve in March. We're doing a men's group in April, a women's group in May. We're doing a voice workshop in June. We're offering all of these services, the WBAI community, to come together, get to know each other. 15 people showed up for the Enneagram workshop. And if you miss that and you want to become a BAI buddy, I will walk you through that workshop just to keep you up to speed. But for a $20 contribution to this station, you become a WBAI buddy. $20 once a month for 12 months. You can pay by check. You can pay by credit card. Call us, 516-620-3602. Your voice matters, so please participate and contribute to this station. Again, 516-620-3602. So where do we go? So you're we're back to our discussion. You're in 10 states. What's the vision? Obviously, you're succeeding, and people want you in their communities, want you in their states. What's the vision?
Yeah, I think the vision is making sure that we, you know, get rid of mass incarceration as a kind of policy. And doing that through our part of that is through employment. And I think we want to make sure that everyone who's leaving incarceration, you know, has the and are able to work, has the ability to get connected to a job. You know, we see the value of work. Our participants see it. It's something that is highly prized in our society. Mm-hmm. And so if you are someone who has a criminal conviction, you know, you face a lot of stigma. You yourself may feel a lot of shame, like you're not able to be a full participant in society. And work is one of the ways that we combat that. And, you know, I would say also we want to change the minds of employers around hiring people with convictions. So we have a very tight labor market now, and employers complaining that it's really hard to fill even entry-level jobs. Mm-hmm. Yet the unemployment rate for people with a criminal conviction is 6 times higher than the general unemployment rate. So that's something that we can change. And so mm-hmm. we see part of our work to expand our impact, not just opening offices in the communities that have the highest levels of incarceration, but also going to employers and saying, hey, can we change your mind about inclusive hiring and help you to, you know, your company to really take advantage of this great eager-to-work population.
Yeah.
And organizations, not just CEO, there are other organizations that also are doing this work. And so we are preparing participants to work. At CEO, there's just in New York City, over 700 credentials awarded to our participants, work credentials like an OSHA certification, different skills that allow them to get access to jobs. What we're seeing is that when someone earns a credential, they're more likely to get a job. They're more likely to keep a job. So we know that training and education are an important part of someone's career pathway. And so we try to do our bit, you know, early on with our participants to help them.
And, you know, it strikes me that you are the vision for the formerly incarcerated person in the short term. You're envisioning for them because they might not know what's ahead of them if they can get a credential. You can present these opportunities to them that they might not even see or know about. And that's a kind of vision for them. And we'll hold this vision for you as we help you get through whatever transitional issues you might have.
Yeah, I always like to tell, you know, my belief, 32 years working in a nonprofit space, that if you want to do this work with joy and a real sense of mission, you have to have a fundamental belief that people can lead their own change. And even the person who is, you know, really like struggling, if they had enough support and help, they could lead their own change. And but to do that, you often need good people, good communities, good organizations, you know, that are doing good work to help people do that. I think at CEO, we try to be that for our participants. Mm. But, you know, they've got hopes and dreams. They many of them have a lot of motivation to want to change.
Yeah,
the how is all often mm-hmm.
yeah,
the big challenge.
The how. And Alex, how do you help them with the how? Because you're on the ground mm-hmm, with them day mm-hmm. in and day out, helping them and hearing their stories.
Well, as Chris had mentioned, many do walk in with the dream. They kind of know, hey, I want to go this way, that way. Actually, they know I want to go in a lot of different directions. It's more about allowing that person to hone in and discover what their value is. We use this this tool from our motivational interviewing coaching
yeah.
From the West Coast in Seattle. We have consultants, and they coach us. So we have a tool. It's called Focus Mountain. So sometimes we'll bring out the Focus Mountain. We'll say, here's the path. Here's the values. Mm-hmm. What do you want to do? Okay, so you value contribution. You value legacy. How can we help you move up that mountain? Mm. What is the next step you can take? So it's all about honing in on the values in order to get to the goal, whether it could be an employment goal, it could
sure.
be another, you know, it could
right.
be something else that's more like a lifetime value
right.
that will go over the span of someone's, you know, life. So
yeah, yeah. I want to suggest also strengths. Positive psychology strengths. There are mm-hmm. 24 positive psychology strengths that you can use. Really focus in. Which one of these resonates with you? You can take a test online on positive psychology strengths. You want people to use what they've already got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, values is great, terrific orientation, but also strengths that you can use. Persistence is one of them. Curiosity is another. Passion is another. Zest for life. Humor. All of these, companionship, compassion, you know, all the 24 strengths that you can look up. And so I'm going to work up a template for
you. I'll look that up.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
The key to well, and I also imagine that you really sort of play on participant skills. Like, what skills did you develop before you were incarcerated? Maybe even while you were incarcerated, you may have developed some skills. It's like, how can we
right.
then transition these skills mm. into, you know, positive results?
Right. We do an aspect of our intake process is called a profile section. And at the bottom of profiles, we say, what skills do you have? What are you bringing to the table? What skills do you see that you'd be able to bring to the mm. workforce? And some of them are negotiating,
mm-hmm.
Networking,
sure.
sales.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
those skills that you've had, and how can you just use it in a different way, potentially?
Right.
And, you know, some of the participants will look at me and say, negotiation? Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
I know
we're
how to
all good at that in here.
Really?
Right.
I can use that again? Okay, wonderful.
Yeah.
So it kind of levels it out, levels the playing field, and lets people yeah. know, like, hey, these are your skills. It's just how what you do with those skills and
right.
what your end goal is.
Right.
So that's one way that we kind of notice strengths. Another way, during our class, we call it P2E class, the orientation, we have an area where it's called psychoeducation. Ready to work, we call it, and we highlight, we have our instructors highlight the strengths. Who are you walking in the door? You're a provider. You're learning to manage your time.
Mm.
You're a community builder. These are skills that people are walking in already knowing.
Mm.
It's not something that we at CEO are going to teach them. We just remind, hey, this is you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Use
okay.
these skills
right.
to your advantage
mm.
in this program.
And, you know, the great thing is on our transitional work crews, you do get to use these positive skills, right? Like, we are every day assessing participants on whether or not they can cooperate with each other,
sure,
take instruction,
sure. yeah.
you know, arrive on time. So
mm.
they begin to learn right away that, wow, maybe I've never had a job before, but I actually know how to show up to work.
Yeah.
You know,
I can be a good role model for
yeah,
the other guys
exactly,
on the crew.
Exactly.
Yeah. yeah. 212-757, Jeff, I think we're going to take one more call if we can get it in. 212-757, 757-5555 if you have a question for Christopher Wattler, the Chief External Affairs Officer for CEO Works, and Alexandra Pulit, the social worker in charge of therapy and counseling and coaching at CEO Works, a program to help transition formerly incarcerated individuals to the workforce. Give us a call, 212-757-5555.
So how does somebody, you know, say they're listening to this program and they're like, man, I would love that support. How do they get in touch with you? Can they get in touch with you if they've been formally incarcerated? Is there any time limit or anything for joining your program?
Well, first of all, if you're on parole, you can simply go to your parole officer in New York City, you know, in any of the cities that CEO is, and ask for a referral. Okay. So that's one way. You can also just walk in our office or call, okay, and we'll help you.
What's the number?
That's a very good question.
We have to check the bottom of our email.
I should also say, you know, we're in 27 cities, right?
So
the number for New York here is 212-422-4430. And you can actually go online and see our sites and the contact information for each site. So we work closely to get referrals from parole and probation.
And what are some of your success stories? Like, I know you have some pretty stellar examples of people who've gone through this program and really, really changed their lives.
I wanted to ask about testimonials, because if you have employers who are taking a risk on these individuals, you would want testimonials from these employers, right? Is there, or do you get testimonials? I mean, I think that should be published. That should be out there.
Yeah. You know, part of my job is to raise CEO's voice in the community. I think we tend to be very focused on doing the good work and not so much in talking about it. And we're getting better at that, evidenced by being, you know, guest on your show. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome back as well.
No, we'd love that. But I'll highlight one example. Vice Media, they had filmed President Obama in a federal prison, the first time a sitting president ever visited a prison. And after that experience, they came out of that and made a corporate commitment to want to do something themselves around it. So they approached CEO. We started an apprenticeship program with them, with four individuals. And, you know, we're actually moving, we're the third cohort from
Wonderful.
Vice. And one of the young people there, I've gotten to know, so we'll get together for lunch twice a year. He started off as an apprentice with them, and is now working in their back office kind of finance department, and is loving it. And the last conversation I had with him was about his vacation in the Caribbean.
Wow.
And here is a young man who came to us and was initially working on a crew pulling garbage out of, you know, a facility and doing kind of groundskeeping work. And now he has a job where he's, you know, he's making a decent salary, living wage with benefits and for a company that he feels really engaged with. So, you know, that's one example. That's the kind of stuff that really, really motivates me.
And also, so if an organization or a company, somebody's listening, wants to.
Oh, we would. Thank you very much. We would love if businesses, and most of our placements are with small and medium sized businesses who do not have HR firms. We have a team of talented, we call them business account managers. They will get you folks interviewed for your job. They'll help you. There are some tax credits and other advantages to hiring people who have a felony conviction. They will help you with that. So if you're a small business, medium-sized business, even a large business, you're interested in hiring from CEO, please go to ceoworks.org.
Terrific. We want to thank you both for being here, and we will invite you back. Christopher Wattler from CEO Works, Chief External Affairs Officer, and Alexandra Pulit, the social worker in charge of therapy and coaching at ceoworks.org. Thank you both for being here. You've been listening to The Positive Mind. We are encouraging you to become a WBAI buddy. We need buddies to join this station. How would you like not to have fun driving and just become a buddy here at the station? 212-757-5555 to become a WBAI buddy. you will get 11 workshops a month.
The WBAI Local Station Board's Community Outreach Committee is working on increasing WBAI's membership. We will meet at WBAI 388 Atlantic Avenue on the third floor in the Borough Hill section of Brooklyn on Friday, February 14th at 1 p.m. Everyone is welcome to attend. Once again, the WBAI's Local Station Board's Community Outreach Committee is working on increasing WBAI's membership. We will meet at 388 Atlantic Avenue on the third floor in the Borough Hill section of Brooklyn on Friday, February 14th at 1 p.m. Everyone is welcome to attend.
Amended and restated Pacifica bond amendments have been proposed and may now be found on the Foundation's website at www.pacifica.org for review and have been voted on by the Pacifica National Board and are to be voted on by the station delegates, followed by a membership vote.
While the field of 2020 candidates is narrowing, entrepreneur Andrew Yang dropped out of the race yesterday after weak showings in both the Iowa caucuses and New Hampshire primary. Yang did not immediately endorse any of the remaining candidates, but said he would consider backing someone if it becomes clear, quote, there's a particular candidate that gives us a superior chance of beating Donald Trump, end quote. Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, another long-shot candidate, also dropped out. Former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick did not drop out yesterday, but said he would, quote, make some decisions today about the future of his campaign. Michael Bloomberg, a late entry into the 2020 race, did not appear on the ballot in New Hampshire. But just today, Bloomberg won endorsements from three Congressional Black Caucus members, a sign he is building support among some top black politicians, despite a 2015 audio recording that surfaced yesterday, in which Bloomberg defends police stop-and-frisk tactics that disproportionately targeted black and Latino people. More than 50,000 people have signed a MoveOn.org petition calling for an investigation into the Department of Justice's decision to ask for a reduced sentence for Roger Stone, the former Trump advisor convicted last year of obstructing Congress. The entire team prosecuting Stone abruptly resigned from the criminal case yesterday after the Justice Department said it was pulling back on its request to sentence Stone to 7 to 9 years in prison. The request for leniency came just hours after Trump complained that the recommended sentence for Stone was, quote, very horrible and unfair. Speaking in the Oval Office yesterday afternoon, Trump denied any involvement in the case but claimed he had the, quote, absolute right to ask for a sentencing revision if he wanted. That marks a break from long-standing efforts to protect prosecutions from political influence. Stone is expected to be sentenced February 20th. Also yesterday, Trump said the military will likely look at disciplinary action against Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman just days after the National Security Council official was ousted from the White House. Vindman provided some of the most damaging testimony during an investigation by the House of Representatives into Trump's dealings with Ukraine. Trump had repeatedly complained about Vindman's testimony and called him insubordinate. The War Powers Resolution, introduced by Senator Tim Kaine, will come to the Senate floor today with a final expected vote tomorrow, with likely support from Republicans Susan Collins, Rand Paul, and Mike Lee. The measure will probably have the 51 votes needed to pass. The resolution would limit Trump's authority to launch military operations against Iran weeks after the U.S. killed a top Iranian general and is a rare congressional effort to rein in the president's executive authority. If passed in the Senate, Trump is expected to veto the resolution. The United Nations today released its long-awaited list of companies with ties to Israeli settlements in the West Bank and urged the international community to press the businesses to cut their links with the illegal settlements. In a statement, the UN said it had identified 112 business entities which it had reasonable grounds to conclude have ties with Israeli settlements. It identified companies listed in the United States, France, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, Thailand, and Britain. Among these was U.S.-based home renting company Airbnb. The international community regards all Israeli settlements in occupied Palestinian territories to be illegal and a major obstacle to Middle East peace. Weather in Washington, D.C. today, partly cloudy with some showers this afternoon, highs in the 40s. Tonight, more rain, lows still in the 40s. It's currently in D.C., 47 degrees and cloudy, and in New York, 43 degrees and sunny. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York,